I am from Philip Eugenia, Drexel College of Medicine, and I'm going to be talking about using a gender framework to explore the role of social media and health education for teens. I have no relationships to disclose. And so first, I'm just going to begin by giving you a snapshot of how exactly we got to where we are. So in 2011, we began with a needs assessment to really identify priorities for girls and women in the Philadelphia area. And in order to do that, we did utilize a World Cafe exercise with our coalition members to help identify some of their priorities. We also analyzed sex disaggregated data from the Southeastern Pennsylvania Household Health Survey of over 10,000 people in that area. And then we conducted 85 key informant interviews using this gendered analysis framework, which is from the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, to really identify some of the different activities of men and women and bargaining positions, access to resources, and gender expectations and norms, et cetera, and how those relate to different patterns of health and how people respond to their health issues. And so out of that needs assessment came our current focus of our project areas. And so the health priorities that were identified included nutrition, sexual health, healthy relationships, and chronic disease. Within that, though, the approach that was identified was this kind of three-approach framework, which was to have outreach events throughout the community that people and different organizations could access, but then to have a targeted intervention. And what I'm going to be focusing my discussion on for the remainder of this presentation is the social media initiative. So this social media initiative was focused largely on teens, although everyone is on social media. Many of our coalition members are not quite as plugged in to social media as, of course, the teens. So we decided to focus our efforts initially on the teens. And so these are just some background information. Over 70% of teens are now using social networking sites. Over 20% use those, or over 40%, excuse me, use those sites daily. 57% report watching videos or video sharing sites, and over 30% are of teens to get health information on dieting and physical fitness from information on the internet. In addition, Facebook is very common, although we'll get to some discrepancies within our actual research in a bit, but nationally, Facebook, among all the surveys, is still the most common used social media site. Twitter use is growing, however, you can see it increase from 11% up to 24%. An average person has about 79 followers. And there's mixed feelings about Facebook, however, and so Instagram has been wildly growing as well and is very popular, as well as things like Snapchat. So, however, although all teens are using social media, it's not equally distributed amongst girls and boys. And so girls are much more likely to use social media sites. They text more often, they tweet more often, they post photos more often. They are worried about others posting photos of them that are ugly online more than boys. They also create blogs more often than boys. The only area that boys tend to do more often is video sharing websites, including posting videos to YouTube. So again, this was our theoretical framework, our gender analysis framework that was used as we move forward with the project to really understand the role of gender norms, roles, and expectations and how that played out in kind of patterns of health practices. We also use the social network theory to, again, better understand how these relationships with teens play out and how they influence their own health decisions and practices. So our specific study goals were to assess social media usability in teens, both for general use as well as information-seeking behaviors, which I'll further describe in a minute. We also wanted to pilot a social media-based program to complement and help the health intervention that was occurring in our high school partners, as well as identify recommendations and future directions for the use of social media-based health promotion in teens. So we used a cross-sectional mixed method study to really look quantitatively. We utilized a survey with our UGMA participant school partners as well as other partner sites. We also conducted focus groups with those participants in our social media internship, which represented seven schools throughout the city. So quantitatively, if 115 youth completed our survey that were between the ages of 13 and 18. Qualitatively, we have 13 students who participated in the focus group, and I'll also describe a school pilot with reinforcement activities with a set of ninth graders in our partner school. And so the quantitative survey with those 115 students, ninth graders, or students, 13 through 18, that assessed utilization, interest, activities, those information-seeking practices, and their ability to identify reliable health sources online. A qualitative focus group, we have two sex-specific focus groups with the N of 13, and that really assessed more social media definitions, what were the benefits and challenges of using social media, why did people use it, what did they use it for most frequently, did they use it for health, if they did, how, and what other information-seeking activities did they do utilize social media for, and their perceptions of how social media could be used as a health promotion tool for other teens. And so for the quantitative survey, you can see here the representation of racial representation. 36% identified as Black or African American, Latino, 18%, 32% white or Caucasian, and 13% other. We also had a fairly equal distribution of males and females. And you can see here the vast majority of the teens reported using social media. And so I'm just going to go through some of the specific social media sites. And so you can see here that of those reporting that they use social media, specifically used Facebook, many of them, over 40%, reported using it daily. So they don't just use it, but they use it daily. Again, of those reporting Twitter, you can see over half don't use Twitter, but of those who do use Twitter, over 40% also use Twitter daily. Instagram, the highest users, we have over 70% of people who use Instagram use it daily. And so we looked at those people who used these sites daily and looked at certain other characteristics. So over 90% of those high-frequency users, again, those who use Facebook daily, also reported that they used it for topics concerning fitness and sexual health. Those who use Twitter daily, over that 66%, also reported using it for topics concerning sexual health. And those who used Instagram daily, over 80% of them reported using it for topics to look regarding sexual health. However, we did have questions on the survey to help assess their ability to identify reliable sources. And so there was kind of a list of sources, and they had to identify which of those were reliable. And over 80% of them could not identify two reliable sources to receive health information. So although they're on social media, they're using it, and they're even considering using it for information such as sexual health, fitness, nutrition, they're not able to identify what's reliable and what's not reliable. So from our focus group findings, we found several differences between the discussion with the boys and the girls. First, they are all using similar things. Again, the girls thought that Facebook is dead. They said once, grandma's on Facebook, it's no longer popular. And so definitely with all of them, but the girls were really much more negative towards Facebook. Instagram was much more common. And looking at the benefit, both of them saw connection as the chief benefit to the social media sources. The boys talked about enhancing visibility, like if you play basketball, you might get a scholarship, someone might notice you or see you. The girls talked more about self-expression. It was an opportunity, an outlet for them to share, to share with others, to express themselves with art or music, to kind of connect with celebrities and other people who were popular. They both also talked about the sense of comedy. They liked going to it for a good laugh, to see something humorous on there. Challenges, they both talked about cyberbullying and fighting. The girls talked a lot more about the fighting, the drama, self-injury, oversharing that people do on social media, and that it could be easy to hack. the boys talked about, you know, this kind of false sense of popularity. If I have 1,000 friends on Facebook, doesn't really mean that I have 1,000 friends or people who I'm connected with, and those negative comments that people might have, as well as the catfishing phenomena. And so when looking at how they use it, again, they both use it to connect. The girls, again, talk more about self-expression, sharing. The boys talk a little bit more about venting or just communicating. Interestingly enough, as far as what the meaning of health was for them, the girls talked more about doing the right thing, eating healthy, fitness, going to the doctor, health insurance, health heart health. And so they talked more about a little bit more about health access behaviors. The boys talked, interestingly enough, about similar about fitness, but interesting about stress and positive energy and self-love, which was an interesting difference that didn't come up at all in the girls' groups. How do teens get information about health? For the boys, definitely the web and Facebook and all of that kind of was number one in their discussion. The girls, they did mention and talk a lot about social media and others, and they did mention school and parents and others in their community as well. Who's responsible for their health? The boys thought that you are, especially once you reach between the ages of 16 or 18, they felt that you began to be responsible for your own health, especially related to things like sexual health. The girls didn't have any consensus really around age. Some thought somewhere around 16 and beyond you begin to become responsible, but the girls also saw the relationship more to the parents and others, so they kind of struggled to figure out when they became responsible for their own health, because obviously they're still connected to their social circumstances, their families. If you decided you wanted to be the healthiest person to eat vegetables and all of that, but your parents and family weren't able to do that or weren't equally invested, then you couldn't do it. So they saw the more of a connection. They kind of struggled to identify when, in fact, they became responsible for their own health. They did, and talking about the link between health and social media, they thought that sharing posts of others could be motivating and encouraging, and they kind of cited some examples of a fitness person that they would see on social media and that might encourage them to be more active, and so they thought it was a great vehicle of kind of increasing awareness, spreading the word, also promoting advocacy. They love the use of humor to kind of get people engaged, and it would allow them to share more, you know, retweet, repost throughout their social networks. There was not a consensus regarding linking to celebrities. Some felt that it was a great idea. Others felt that it was a horrible idea because it would be seen as ingenuine, that the celebrity was just getting paid to kind of promote a topic that it wasn't really a sense of who they were. When we looked at the, so we kind of used this information to begin thinking about how social media could be used in our health promotion intervention in school. It's kind of a wraparound. And so we piloted this with a group of ninth graders who we're currently working with at a local high school, a partner high school. And the ninth grade class was a total of 104 students that we participated in this project, 30% African American, 20% Hispanic, 36% Caucasian, and 56% female and 44% male. So we pilot utilized a gender responsive framework through a wide range of activities. This really focused on Facebook. This particular pilot focused on using Facebook as a way to continue that discussion of societal gender expectations and norms and stereotypes and how they influence those adolescent behaviors. And so we would post these comments on Facebook and the students would respond to them. So this is an example of one of the statements that was posted to Facebook. It says, some research has shown that more teen girls than boys eat fruits and vegetables. Do you agree or disagree? Please explain. And so these were just two examples of the comments that the students posted on Facebook. One female student said she agrees, guys don't always eat healthier because they have a healthier metabolism and they exercise. A male said he disagreed because boys do eat healthier when they are doing sports so that they can be fit. He thinks it's equal. So we were able to kind of really take a lot of the discussion from social media and then bring it back to the classroom to kind of have a real, you know, additional conversations around gender norms and gender expectations. Kind of why did people, you know, feel that guys have a healthier metabolism and that they exercise more? What were the factors that, you know, allowed them to perceive that boys exercise more? What were the social things going on? All of that. Again, another example was 12th grader was very concerned about their body image, especially their weight, so they could often go on extreme diets. Again, deliberately, the 12th grader was not identified as a boy or girl. The female said she thought it was a girl because girls care a lot about their figures. A male also thought it was a girl because girls are insecure, and they need to worry about their hormones. And so we also were able to bring that discussion back into the classroom. Additionally, in the classroom, we had gender norms were influenced by sexual activity and decision-making through conversations around beauty, perceptions of beauty, masculinity, femininity, pressures. Boys talked about their pressures and related to masculinity around sexual activity, and girls talked about their thoughts about keeping a guy influence their sexual activity. So some of our accomplishments were really to increase awareness and understanding of the role in gender and health. Definitely this was new for both the students and the teachers. You know, when people think about social issues, they often go to race class, and they weren't well able to really think about gender in the beginning. They had never really thought about gender differences, as well as the teacher acknowledged that she had never really discussed gender differences or had that lens in her health education classes. So it was a great eye-opening for everyone. Teens definitely need help identifying reliable resources or reliable sources online, and this need balance the need to be cool and hip, but also reliable. Some of our next steps were evaluating a gendered health promotion initiative using mixed methodology. We also have expanded our social media internship, and all of the students identified the gender focus of their topics and the gender relevance of their topics and how it plays out differently for males and males and females. We're also looking at those who adopt and who are utilizing social media versus those who are not, and those differences and the role of social media in addressing those gender norms, roles, and expectations. So ultimately, we feel that, you know, creating gendered health messages, allowing gender differences, and understanding those gender differences in the meaning of health is really important for teens as well as everyone. And the inclusion of gender and youth health programming that uses social media can really result in more effective and tailored health programming and better outcomes for